Remarks of the President, Jefferson City, Missouri, 8 October 1952.
Friends and neighbors, gives me much pleasure to present to you now our fellow Missourian, the best president the United States has ever had.
Thank you very, very much. I don't need to tell you how glad I am to be here. You've seen me in a lot of campaigns before, but I think this one is the most important one in which I ever took part. If I may be entirely frank with you, I'm, if possible, more anxious that the Democratic administration should be continued this year than I was in 48, and that's saying a lot. I honestly believe that the whole future of this country and the peace of the world may depend upon a Democratic victory, and that's why I'm here. I think we have, on the Democratic ticket in this state, as fine a selection of men for the positions as we've ever had in the state's history. And you know, I've been in state politics a long, long time. Longer than I like to think about. The candidate for senator, Stuart Symington, I've known for many, many years. I think very highly of him. He'll make a good senator. He's familiar with the situation in Washington, and he'll do a good job for Missouri. And I can speak from experience on that because I was a senator from Missouri one time myself. Your congressman, Morgan Moeller, is one of the best in the Congress. You can't get a better man for that position. I know you're going to send him back. And of course, all of you know Phil Donnelly. He served capably and well as governor of this state. And I know he'll serve you well again. I want you to go out and vote for the national ticket, too. Stevenson for president and Sparkman for vice president. Adlai Stevenson is a skilled man and an experienced one. He knows a great deal about the art of civil government. He has conviction, and he is absolutely honest with himself. He is discussing the issues in this campaign and talking sense to the American people. Listen to what he has to say, and you will know as I do that here is the man we want and need to be our president for the next 4 years. There will be troubles in those years, and he is the man to deal with them. One of the most fundamental issues in this campaign is the great difference in outlook and approach between our two political parties. The Democratic Party has always been the party with a heart for the people, concerned about their wants and their needs. With us, the people come first. With the Republicans, property and profits come first, ahead of the people. The Republican Party has a calculating machine where its heart ought to be. And the calculator only works for the big lobbies and the special interest organizations who pay the party's bills and call the tune. Because our parties differ in this way, you will find a large majority of the Democrats in favor of programs that bring progress for the people. And usually a great majority of the Republicans will be lined up on the other side against the people. For nearly 2 weeks now, I've been going across the country telling the people how our two great parties differ on the issues that affect our daily lives. Here in Jefferson City, I want to talk to you about one of the most important issues of all. That is education in this country and the proper part our government should play in it. I think most of you realize, those of you with children surely do, that the schools of our nation are in trouble. It has been getting worse for years. Soon it will become a catastrophe if we do not act to meet it fast. We've had prosperity in this country for many years. The proportion of children attending school is higher than it ever was before in our history. High school enrollments are up 60% in 20 years. And with the birth rate up 50% since 1940, the total of school-age children is climbing very, very fast. This calls for a great expansion in the school building. But the building's cost and maintenance cost have been increasing greatly in recent years, far beyond the budgets most school districts can afford. Not only have building costs gone up, but living costs for teachers have risen also, while their salaries have lagged way behind. Teaching is so poorly paid in most places today that literally thousands of potential teachers are being lost to other jobs. And the school teacher, my friend, is the most important asset next to the mother of a child that he has. The teacher of the child in the lower grades, the primary grades, makes a greater impression on the children of the country than any other person with whom he comes in contact. And I speak from experience. I can still remember my first and second and fourth and fifth grade teachers who made a tremendous impression on me, got me started in the right direction. And I'll have to admit that I may not have ended up as well as they thought I should, but then... they were not to blame for that, but the importance of keeping the teachers in a financial position, in an economic position, where they can afford to continue to teach is one of the most important things in this country. And you'll find that most teachers are people who have their hearts set on the rising generation, and they're not out for money, but they certainly ought not to be allowed to starve to death. These are the factors that have combined. These are the factors that have combined to bring on the crisis in our schools. More children to teach, not enough schools to put them in, and too few teachers to instruct them. Now everybody recognizes that the education of our children is a job for the states to control. I don't know anybody who wants federal control of education. But the states and the towns and the cities are not equally equipped to meet the present crisis in their schools. It takes money to do that, a lot of money. Some states can scrape it together, others cannot. None of them have the reserves to do an ideal job. The poorest states can hardly get by at all. The states have done a lot, taken all together, and they deserve great credit for it. The volume of school building has never been higher than it is now. The same is true of teacher salaries on the average, but it still isn't enough, and it certainly isn't spread widely enough around the country. Some places have first-class schools, but too many others have substandard schools, and a lot of them are too poor to do much about it. That's why I've tried for 7 years to start a program of federal financial aid to all the states in proportion to their needs. The Democratic platform of 1948 endorsed that program. Our party platform for 1952 states that the federal government must play its proper part in helping to carry the financial load of building schools and teaching our children. Now, how have the Republican calculating machines responded to all this? They've mostly been against it year after year. Even Senator Taft, Mr. Republican himself, was unable to force through the Republican 80th Congress the federal aid to education program he had borrowed from these Democratic colleagues. In 1949, the present Republican candidate, then head of Columbia University, lent his prestige to the Republican congressman opposing federal aid, and his action helped to defeat the bill. That was the famous occasion when Senator Morris, the liberal Republican from Oregon, called the candidate's views sophomoric. Senator Morris also said, and I quote, A background of leadership in military affairs is not, to my mind, the background for making pronouncements upon the public school system. To what Senator Morris said, I can only add amen. As the crisis in our schools has deepened, the stand of the Republicans has actually grown worse and not better. In 1948, the Republican platform had the grace to favor equality of educational opportunity, and that's a quotation, equality of educational opportunity. That at least implied some form of federal aid, since equality can be achieved no other way. Now, in 1952, with the school crisis made more serious by inaction, the Republican platform, following the lead of the Republican candidate, states flatly, the responsibility for sustaining this system of popular education has always rested upon the local communities in the states. We subscribe fully to this principle. In other words, no federal aid of any kind to help finance good schools. That is an attitude which would condemn many of this country's children to poor education or none at all, merely because of where their families live. The Republican policy is violently unfair. It is wrong. It's worse than wrong. It's just plain stupid. Thomas Jefferson knew better. A long time ago, he said, if a nation expects to be free and ignorant, it expects what never was and never will be. That's just as right as it can be. The Republicans are always talking about freedom, but they take their stand on the side of ignorance every time, and ignorance is freedom's worst enemy and always will be, and that's the reason I'm a Democrat. There's no leadership and no forward vision in a party or a candidate that takes a stand like this, and you young people are vitally interested in that. You must, in making your decision of how you are going to work for the welfare and the continuation of this republic of ours, ally yourselves with a party that believes in progress, a party that looks forward, a party that has ideas for progress, and not a party that is always looking back to 1896 and wishing for William McKinley to be president. These are not the people for you to trust. They are not the people who understand your interest or the country's interest. And I say to you, don't trust them. Don't vote for them. Vote for the party that has always worked for you and always will. Vote for the men who have been great friends of education and the true friends of the people. Now, you are the fundamental basis of the Republic of the United States. The power of government rests in the people by the Constitution, the greatest document of government that ever was written. And it's your duty to exercise your prerogative as a voter to see that we have the right kind of government. When you don't go to the polls and vote, when you don't exercise that prerogative, and you get bad government, you've got nobody in the world to blame but yourselves, and you deserve what you get. Now I say to you, on the fourth day of November, exercise your right. Go to the polls and vote for progress. Vote for the welfare of this country for another 4 years by putting Stevenson and Sparkman in the White House.